Hello, Tomorrow Built Today listeners. This is one of your co-hosts, Jeremy Liu. For those of you new to the podcast, we cover interesting trends and predictions, along with discussions about the latest news in consumer tech. Now, sit back and enjoy. In this episode, you'll hear from our friend Brian Lee. He's a serial entrepreneur and the co-founder of The Honest Company, ShoeDazzle, and LegalZoom. He's also the co-founder and managing director of BAM Ventures, a venture capital firm based in Los Angeles. Today, we'll talk about the intersection of pop culture and technology, how he made it as a serial entrepreneur without a tech background, and what's ahead for The Honest Company. Please join me in welcoming Brian Lee. So I'm here today with Brian Lee, who I've had the pleasure of working with across multiple companies since about 2008. Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the companies you've started and how you started your journey into entrepreneurship?
Sure. So great to be here with you, Jeremy, and great to see you. I started my entrepreneur journey when I was born, basically. I almost feel like I was born with a certain DNA that just loves building and starting companies, and I'm blessed to have done a few of them. My first company was LegalZoom.com, which we launched in March of 2001, and then started working with you on ShoeDazzle was my second company. Started that with Kim Kardashian and a few others, and then The Honest Company. I started with Jessica Alba about 5.5 years ago now, and now I'm working on a couple others.
And what's I think is super interesting is that you don't have a technical background, right? You actually you were a recovering lawyer.
Right. That's true. I mean, I started life as a lawyer. I was a tax attorney, and that's when I kind of dreamt up the idea of LegalZoom.com with a partner of mine, Brian Liu, that I went to law school with. But no, I do not have a technical background. I don't know truly the first thing of coding. I'm really an ideas guy, a strategist, and a more high-level vision guy. But, you know, as any great entrepreneur, I'm good at finding talent that could help me execute. And so I've always been kind of blessed with finding the right engineering team to help me fulfill what that vision is.
Yeah, you know, we're finding at Lightspeed that probably 70% of our consumer tech portfolio is outside the Bay Area now. And if I think about, and they're mostly here in LA or they're in New York. And if I think about the last 2 years, it's probably more like 85% is in LA or New York. I think we've made 4 investments in LA in the last 6 months or so. And so, you know, I think what we're seeing is that the scarce resource in building consumer technology companies is not the technologists anymore. It's this unique insight into popular culture. And right. Popular culture has always been set here in LA and in New York.
I agree with you, Jeremy. It's, you know, back in the day, even when we started LegalZoom, I mean, it cost us $55,000 just for one Blade server. And we're so proud of buying that Blade server. But now with the cost the way they are, it's come so far in terms of affordability. That's number one, in terms of the actual core technology. And now with some of the platforms out there with the Magentos and the Shopify Pluses, is that the engineering resources are definitely not, you know, at the level that was required even 5 years ago, right? So I think when you talk about, you know, consumer brands, I think these brands will be popping up and starting really everywhere. LA is definitely a hub because, to your point, the popular culture as well as New York, but really it's become extremely, you know, accessible in terms of building a consumer brand online anywhere in the country. It doesn't have to be, you know, Silicon Valley as it traditionally was in the past. But in terms of popular culture, I think, you know, when you look at the likes of, you know, some of these brands that were started by influencers, the Fenty's with Rihanna, the Kylie's, the cosmetic, the Honest Company with Jessica Alba, even Yeezy as a brand with Kanye. It's like it's come to that point where I think popular culture is truly leading consumer innovation. And I think, you know, Los Angeles and New York are definitely leading that way, but that could be really anywhere, because even when you talk about big celebrities like the ones I just mentioned versus even the social influencers, these social influencers are all across the country as well, and they're starting some great brands themselves, right? And so I'm truly excited about the convergence of that popular culture mixing with this affordable, kind of accessible platform where you could like really launch some beautiful brands.
I think that's right. It has become easier and easier to launch a company, but to build one to scale does require to become part of popular culture or to ride part of popular culture. And that's why I think San Francisco, popular culture has never come out of there. You know, New York and LA, and I think LA specifically has this long history of influencing how people spend their entertainment time.
Right.
And I think that, you know, commerce, shopping, brands is increasingly part of the entertainment world.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing about Los Angeles, it's this is where they live, right? L.A. was started in that fashion, if you think about it. It was a desert, right? And then you had a bunch of people come out here and start building movie studios in the desert. Right. And then other dreamers followed. The you know, the talent started following. And so it's a city built on, you know, entertainment. It's a city built on popular culture. And I think that's bleeding into entrepreneurism for a lot of these folks. And I think this is the hub for that.
What are some of the influences of some of the new companies that you're thinking about? How is the sound on that? Do we need to re-record? Yeah. What are some of the influences that are helping you think about where there's opportunity to start new companies today?
You know, when I think of starting new companies today, it's really, I see a lot of companies starting, of course, because I also run a little seed fund. We invest in a lot of startups. It's BAM Ventures. Thought I would get that plug in there, Jeremy.
Am.vc.
You could edit that out if you'd like. No, but so we get to see a lot of companies that are starting. And really, for me, it's I like to try things that are a little bit different and unique. I like to be kind of at the forefront in terms of, you know, innovative ideas. So I'm looking at categories that truly have been undisrupted. Such a cliche word, but, you know, it's every day I see another fashion brand, truthfully. Every day I see another beauty brand, you know, another food brand. It's like I kind of want to do something a little bit more unique. So I'm still looking at personal care type categories, CPG, but I'm also looking at media platforms and the like that I could bring in influencers to make an impact and grow.
I think that's a great observation. There'd been virtually no innovation in the diaper market before Honest Company came along.
Right.
And that was a great example where, you know, a sleepy industry really offered an opportunity for a startup to, you know, very rapidly create a brand, take share, and make a name for itself.
Right. Exactly. And that's why you'll see the most successful kind of startups in this consumer area. It's you're competing against some brands and some industries that truly are asleep at the wheel, you know, which is why Dollar Shave kind of came out of nowhere. You know, there hasn't been a lot of innovation in that space for a while, and as well as all the Honest Company and diapers, as well as even like, you know, smaller companies like Native deodorant that came out of nowhere in terms of going direct to consumer with a great kind of natural deodorant.
Yeah, I think that's great. So as you think about, you know, building these companies, as you think about kind of building the founding team of these companies, what do you look for in the individuals, and then what do you look for in the team itself that will fit well together, work well together, and gel?
You know, for me, it's really all about the team. You live and die by how strong your team is, and it's all about gelling together. It's all about believing in the same mission of the company. You know, so for us, for example, like at LegalZoom or The Honest Company or even Shoe Dazzle, it was all about, do you believe in what we're building, and do we have that commonality? Because that commonality is strong, right? And that keeps you kind of binded. It's also, you know, it's kind of a simple rule, but you got to like the people. You know, you really do. It's like there's so much to be said about wanting to hang out with this person after work on weekends. It's like, do you want them over to your home to barbecue? You know, it's like that, especially at the very earliest stages of a company, you got to be completely in sync and you want to be together for very long hours. And so you're going to have to get along. And it's like, if you don't have that, it tends not to work if you don't have that, truthfully.
And I think that, I think people often underestimate how much work it is. Yeah. And how many zigs and zags there are along that startup journey. I remember some of those early days at Shoe Dazzle where you were desperately trying to find people to ship the products out because the orders were more than you expected. Do you want to tell that story about how you were
absolutely. Like... So when we launched Shoe Dazzle, it was fascinating because we thought we were ready, but then Kim Kardashian went on to The Tonight Show and announced Shoe Dazzle. And we got so many orders, and we just didn't have enough capacity to ship them. So basically, I was driving around the city at about 1 o'clock in the morning, asking people on the street if they would come work for me. And I was like, it's nothing illegal. I just need to pack shoes in our warehouse and get them shipped out. And so I ended up hiring like three or four people off the street. I called all my friends. All the earliest team members called all their friends, and we would have, you know, late nights of packing and shipping shoes together. So it was quite the adventure.
That's right. And you know, it's that sort of scrappiness that I think you know, startup teams really need to be able to display, because it would have been easy for people to say, oh, we're just going to ship late. Yeah. We're just going to disappoint customers. But yeah, you know, Shoe Dazzle never did.
Yeah.
That's great. And so another company that we're both involved in is Holla.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the most notable things about the team that you pulled together with Holla is that you've worked with all of them before.
That's right.
Can you talk a little bit about the benefits of working with people you've worked with before?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I tend to always choose to work with people I've worked with before because I know what I'm getting. I love working with folks that you know, sharing the vision together. I know that they're scrappy, especially at the startup stage, that they know what it takes to build and to get to scale. And so at Holler, worked with, you know, the CEO, the CTO, the head of product, head of analytics. It was pretty much a pretty well-baked kind of vetted team that I've worked with before, and it's worked great. You know, I'm excited about Holler. It's gotten to that level where it's like, you know, we got to kind of break through in terms of, you know, some of the branding and the marketing and product, margins and so forth that every company that scales needs to deal with. But, we're having fun and it's chugging along.
Yeah. You know, I think, the speed of execution that comes from working with people that have worked together before is always just, a very pleasant surprise. You know, when you put a new team together and people haven't worked together before, there's just certain cycles they need to go through before they start to understand how they're going to gel. But when you work with people who've worked together before, I remember in our first year at Holla, we did more than $20 million in revenue, which was an extraordinary first year for an e-commerce company. And I credit that to, and as I recall, you guys stood up the site in, from company formation to first revenue, it was like less than 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, it was like 3.5 months that we got it from conception to launch.
And you just don't get that unless you've got a team that's worked together before and can shorthand things and doesn't have to hash out every detail and trust each other.
And that's one of the most important things you just said. It's trust. We know what we're capable of. we don't have to speak softly, if you will. We just know what we have to get done, and people speak freely, and you know, there are never any hard feelings, truthfully, you know, but everyone's working really hard and everyone knows what they have to do, and you're very direct, basically, because you already know each other, you already know how you like to work. So
I think another thing that I've always admired has been that the businesses you've built have been aimed at middle America.
Mm.
LegalZoom was not aimed at the top end of the legal market. It was aimed at ordinary people trying to figure out how to do a will or,
mm-hmm.
Take care of, very, very common challenges. Shoedazzle at a price point of, under $40 a month was very much aimed at the mass market.
Right.
The Honest Company aimed at middle America, new moms, mm-hmm. millennial moms, who are now 70-80% of all births are to millennials now. Hala, again, aiming at disrupting the dollar store. And so, I think that's something that is, again, Apple does not target the mass market in the beginning. It always targets the high end. You look at the HomePod. DJI, the drones are expensive. When GoPros came out, like they were targeting a very high end. You've always focused on the middle America market. Talk a little bit about why that is.
I think it's just inherent nature part of it, because I am middle America in a lot of ways. I think and act like the masses. It's kind of a weird ability of mine to, it's like whatever I like, the masses tend to like. So that's kind of a benefit, but it's also, my dad actually told me really, really early on that there are more, beer drinkers in America than wine drinkers. Right. And I really took that to heart. And because my dad always sold to the masses, he sold stainless steel utensils to restaurants in middle America. And so for me, it's, understanding the scale of the consumer as well in terms of, where they reside, what they love, what they purchase. It's always been kind of, I guess, second nature for me. But it's also been something that, again, the most important thing is it's what do I like? What do I seek? Because it really is what the masses usually like. I mean, I could listen to a song even for the first time on the radio, and I could tell you if it'll be a number one hit. Because my ears are like that too. It's like I'll listen to something and I'll be like, okay, that's going to be popular. I'll watch a TV show and I'll tell you whether or not, I tend to like shows that everyone else likes. It's just odd that way.
That sense of being tuned into popular culture, I think that is one of the things that is harder to find in Silicon Valley.
Mm.
I mean, if you live in San Francisco Bay Area, based on your day-to-day experience, you could legitimately believe that the most popular car in America is the Tesla Model S. and you don't actually see very many of the actual most popular vehicle in America, which is the Ford F-150 pickup truck. Right. I can't remember the last time I saw one in the Bay Area at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what you're talking about is, again, one of the benefits of getting out of the Bay Area, because people who have insights into the way that real Americans live, they tend to not live in the Bay Area. They do live in LA. They do live in the rest of the country. And I think that's why we're seeing so much innovation happening outside of the Bay Area in consumer world.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, look, no city will ever be able to become, Silicon Valley, San Francisco. That's pretty clear when it comes to true technology innovation. Because look, we don't have a grandfather in Los Angeles named, Fairchild Semiconductor, right? We don't have grandparents named Yahoo and eBay and so forth. And so, it's a new ecosystem. But to your point, and when it comes to consumer brands, absolutely. It's like we Los Angeles and New York have always been the centers of fashion and innovative creative thinking. When it comes to consumer and entertainment. And I don't think that's ever going to change. I don't think San Francisco can ever change their colors and say, we are now the new creative hub for fashion. It's not going to happen.
And so now you started a startup studio, and what's the plan?
Yeah, I'm super excited to be working with you again, Jeremy, and with Lightspeed. But in terms of my plans, I plan on to keep doing what I love, which is starting companies and building them and scaling them. And so the plan is to launch 1 to 2 companies a year, mostly in the consumer space, some in the media space, and continue doing that for as long as I can.
And when do you think you'll be able to talk about some of the new stuff that you're working on now?
I think in about 2 or 3 months, I'll be ready to kind of announce what I'm working on. But I'm really excited to be working with some of the influencers we're working with for 1 or 2 of these companies that we're launching. I'm very excited about the teams that we've built. And again, very excited to keep working with you.
Well, I'm also thrilled to be working with you again. And since I know what these companies are, I actually can't wait to when you're ready to unveil them to the world, because I think they're going to be just as impactful as the companies that you've built already.
So. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thanks, Brian. Well, look, it's great to talk to you again. And then once we're ready to launch some of these new companies, let's talk again, because I think it'll be really fun.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed it, please go to iTunes or wherever you're listening and rate and review us. You can find us at tbtpodcast.com. Tomorrow Built Today is produced by Lightspeed Venture Partners. The theme music you heard today is by Mikhail Manvelian.